gente, welcome to another episode of El ADN Podcast, where every week we sit down with the movers and shakers of our culture for an honest and intimate conversation about their career journey, including all the challenges and failures they've overcome to reach their current success. I'm your host, Victoria Leandra. Piera Gilardi is an entrepreneur, mama, and storyteller passionate about bringing out the creativity in everyone, championing women and girls and the power of play. As co-founder and executive creative director for Refinery 29, Piera built a trailblazing brand that expanded the way media and advertising represented women. Her brand new venture, Wild Things World, aims to combat perfectionism and burnout by delivering experiences that support creative play. I've seen you transition from this very career-driven female CEO to someone who's sort of family first, family oriented, very creative, very in tune with who they are. And I'm not, at least from afar, the connection that I see is that you've changed after Viva a little bit. And in a way, I think that you've become sort of like a new type of CEO. So can you tell me a little bit more about how she has changed your life?
Going through, you know, dealing with infertility and needing to go take care of myself and go through this treatment actually really started to change my life in the first place, because it was unfortunately the first time in my kind of like go career minded state that I was really forced to take care of myself in this very time intensive way. And it was really a life changing and positive thing, because I had really put myself and my own needs on the back burner a lot of the time. And so going through the fertility process, actually, I had to go every morning, almost every morning to the fertility center, do blood work, do all these things, and really focus on taking care of my body. You know, that kind of shifted something in me. And it, I think, sort of started to get me ready for the shift that was coming with motherhood. Becoming a mom and the process to get there really taught me a lot about self-compassion, taking time for myself, you know, the fact that you can't pour from an empty cup. I've always been very family oriented. I grew up in a big, close-knit Italian-American family, and I spend a lot of time with my family. And but I also grew up in a family that was very much about work ethic. And there was, you know, really driving home the point that you need to work hard and pursue success. And that's great, but I think I was missing the balance of that.
Can you talk me a little bit more about those tactics that you use and tools that you use to sort of center yourself and get back to your own mind and who you are?
You know, I think if I could go back and tell myself something, you know, in the past, as I was sort of embarking on this entrepreneurial journey, one of the things I would want to tell myself is just that it's so important to prioritize self-compassion, self-acceptance, and play. I always believed that being self-critical was what drove me to be good. And I had this really harsh inner monologue with myself. I was constantly pushing and driving myself harder, but often to this point where I would, you know, I mean, I remember one time like laying on the floor crying and just feeling like, I don't know how I can possibly continue, you know, hitting that kind of burnout point. And what I've come to realize is that actually self-compassion doesn't make you unaccountable. It's kinder, it's more motivating, and it builds so much more confidence, because when you take the time to talk to yourself in a kind way, to celebrate yourself for the small things that you do well in the day, that really helps you to build this kind of unshakable confidence that you know that you are resilient, you know that you have these tools to fall back on, and you know that you have your own back. I think I was constantly fighting with myself, and I was, the other thing I didn't really realize was how the things that made me different as a creative leader and as an executive, I always, I spent a lot of time like fighting those things in myself and seeing them as a deficit, thinking, and over time, and when I fought that in myself, I was pretty miserable and I actually wasn't showing up in my full power. But when I accepted those things about myself, when I said, you know what, like, I'm a playful person and maybe I don't see a lot of playful executives out here, but I'm going to accept that that is a superpower because it's my thing. You know, I'm going to accept that I went to art school and I didn't go to business school and see how I can leverage that. And when I started to really embrace the things that I was good at, the things that I love, I started to see myself gain so much more like momentum and be more effective. Yes, we all have things to learn. It's good to know what you don't know, own up to that and seek the knowledge, seek the people that are going to help fill in those gaps, but do that while also like celebrating the things that are unique to you. I was having coffee with a musician the other day and she doesn't have a music background, but she taught herself music and now she's getting all these like really amazing DJ gigs and has all this momentum. But when I was talking to her, she kept referencing how she doesn't have a music background. And I said to her, I said, you know, because I had the same experience, I said, you know, I would love to encourage you to try and see how not having a music background can actually be a benefit, you know, how you might be seeing things really differently, how you might have a different approach, how you might bring these different inputs in. Because I think we spend so much time feeling like we're deficient or we're imposters. When you can accept both what you're good at and what you need to learn to reach your goals, then I think it's just so much more of a harmonious place and you're not spending so much energy and time fighting yourself and criticizing yourself. And instead you can just go.
In a way, it's about reframing. It's reframing how you speak about yourself. And when you want to innovate in a space that is often very traditional, like media, you have to lean into what makes you different. And sometimes that feels so uncomfortable because it's like, well, no one else has done it before. Well, that's how you innovate. What else will you say is something that at the beginning, going back, you wish someone had told you?
I think mindset is everything. Over the course of my career, the thing that has created the most growth and the most momentum is definitely mindset. I would also say, you know, not to waste time trying to convince people who don't get you and to focus your time on finding and building with the people that do get you. The people that are for you, you know, it's really about finding them and building those relationships and not, you know, fixating on convincing people.
So much of what Refinery 29 is and all the other projects that you've worked in is a matter of packaging ideas. And I think that that has to do a lot with your new project, Well Thanks World, because you do a very well packaging of what you are offering and the skills that you bring to the table. Tell me a little bit more about that process.
Yeah, so I'm creating this new endeavor called Wild Things World. And it really is, it kind of centers in my experience of leading creative people. And when I say creative people, I believe everyone is creative. Creativity is our life force. We all are creative. We're born creative. It isn't something that's like a lightning strike. You know, I think people see creativity as like this moment, this eureka moment, this moment of inspiration. But creativity is much more of a practice. It's like working out. You need to exercise your creativity. I really see play and creativity as these tools that are so core to our humanity, our soul, our way of connecting in the world, our way of expressing ourselves. I really want to help more people to feel comfortable to explore that side of themselves. And I think there's so many of us that are strung out on perfectionism. You know, we're so afraid to risk because we don't want to fail. Mm-hmm. We don't want to look bad. We don't, you know, we're scared of the uncomfortable process of being a beginner. with Wild Things World, I'm really trying to create an environment, create experiences, create classes, create kits and products that help people to just become, just get comfortable with trying new things, exploring their creativity, and doing it as a practice. And I think when it comes to packaging ideas, it's, you know, it's a, it's also an art form and a practice where I always start with the why. With Wild Things World, I'm starting this new endeavor, and what was holding me back from sharing it with the world was that I knew deeply the why, like what I want to solve and like what I want to see more of in the world, but I still don't know the what. I'm trying different things, I'm experimenting. And so what I was holding myself back with was I was saying, well, I shouldn't share this until I know exactly what it is. So I finally realized, like, I'm creating this product because I specifically want to help people push past that perfectionism and enjoy the process and get into the practice of creativity. So if I want to be the person to create this new endeavor, then I need to walk the walk. I said, you know what? I'm just going to put this out there in its imperfection, in its big question mark. And I, since I did that, it's been so invigorating. I've like already failed so many times and I'm learning so much, and I am enjoying the process. And I think it's also teaching me so much to do it in this way, because it is walking the walk. Often then by the time you put it out there, you're so invested. There's no room, and there's no really room for people to influence what it becomes, or maybe you're not as open to that influence because you worked so hard to polish it. A mantra of mine, which is from this amazing artist and nun from the 60s who was like an activist and an artist called Sister Carita Kent. She has these rules, and one of them is make everything an experiment. And so I really try and live by that, because play is experimentation. Mm-hmm. When you think of things that you're doing as an experiment, you kind of bust up that false binary of I'm either going to win or lose.
Some people say when you have an idea and you fully believe in the idea, hone in on it and not necessarily listen to what others have to say, just go all in. What is the balance between the two, when you really believe in your idea versus when you think other people can help you? And who do you take advice from and who you choose not to?
It's a balance, right? And it's also very individual. When you have an idea, I think it's important to hold on to, like, what is the most important part of this to you? You always want to stay true to the why, and also your values, those are the things that, you know, you don't want to compromise on. And then it's figuring out whose feedback is important to you. Like, who's your core audience? If your core audience is, you know, for example, young women, you know, maybe your husband or your dad, you know, your dad or your mom's feedback, you know, you're going to listen to them, you love them, but they're not your demographic. So they're not the perspective that you're asking for. So I think there's that. And then there's the part about, like, you want to get feedback, but you want to get feedback from people that believe in your why and your value proposition. So if someone just fundamentally doesn't get what you're doing, or they don't want that, and they're not looking to get that in their life, then their feedback is not important. You have to understand that everyone's feedback is completely subjective. So I have seen people get so hung up on all the different conflicting feedback, like, you're not going to get unanimous feedback. So I think it's that balance of, like, using your intuition, staying rooted in the reason that you're doing what you're doing, while also knowing that you're not going to be successful if you're not, you know, listening to your, you know, contingency, listening to your customers, and letting them help you to get, you know, better every day and to create what they, you know, the thing that they really want to invest in.
You mentioned not being afraid to fail. And that reminded me about something that I listened to yesterday. And it's that if you knew that you were 20 failures or 20 no's away from achieving what you want to achieve, how fast will you be out there seeking out those no's? I wonder if you can share about an experience that you failed super hard and then how you reacted and how you turned it around for the better.
Well, first of all, I love that. I think that's truly, I would say, the most important thing in pursuing anything that you want is taking daily courageous action. And I love the idea that you just brought up of seeking the no, like saying, I'm going to go for 20 no's. Like it's so often we don't take the action because mm-hmm. we're afraid of the failure. Quickest way to kind of get to that outcome that you want is to just take action towards mm-hmm. it. And I will give you, I have so many examples of failure, but one that always kind of comes to mind is the fact that when we were launching Refinery, we launched it as this, it was a map of independent boutiques that you could search and filter. And we really wanted to support kind of the independent spirit and fashion and people that had more of a lens on fashion as self-expression and individuality. Anyway, so we launched as this map, the searchable map of boutiques. And, you know, we put all this work towards it. We got it out there and we were in Women's Wear Daily. We got like 5,000 visitors on our first day. We were like, went and had like a pizza party. And the next day, like our traffic tanked and we realized that there was no reason for people to come back to a map every day. And then we had to completely reimagine what our product was. So that was like 2 days in to launching. We were like, oh, this is not going to work. 8 years into doing the business, there was this point where I would do interviews and people would say like, wow, it was an overnight success. And I would say, yeah, it was a, you know, overnight success that happened in 8 years. You know, it took mm-hmm. us 8 years to be an overnight success. My friend Jenna Zoe was talking the other day and she said, that she loves the word discipline because it comes from the word disciple, and that begs you the question, like, what are you devoted to? And when you, I think, stay focused on that and then stay focused on taking that daily courageous action, like having the discipline to just keep at it, you know, that brings about the outcome that you want versus, yeah, getting fixated on the success or fixated on the outcome or, you know, hung up on perfectionism.
I think some of the most successful businesses have been created by a group of people, such as Refinery 29. It's a group of co-founders. What will you say are the things that you look for when you are identifying talent to build Refinery 29?
When thinking about partners, you know, it's hard to say because when we were starting Refinery, I was 24 and I wasn't very strategic. It wasn't like a strategic decision, but what we did do was there's way too much overlap in the beginning. And I think when you're, if I could do it, you know, I mean, I guess not if I could do it over because it worked out very well, but if I was giving advice to someone else in how to find the right co-founders, I would say to find people that are values aligned with you, that care about the same things that you do, but that have different and complementary skill sets. If you are more creative, visionary, brand building, you probably want to partner with someone that is more of a producer, structured, operational type of person. And I think the other thing that other mistake that we make is, if you operate in one way, you often think that, like, and you enjoy doing certain things, like often we think that, oh, no one's going to be like excited about doing the project management and organizing all these things. That's the boring work. But for a huge group of people, they love organizing things. They love putting things in the right order, the right process. So finding those complementary skill sets, I think, is really important when you're identifying partners.
You mentioned that when people said Refinery 29 was an overnight success, it really took you 8 years. What within those 8 years that it took Refinery 29 to really blow up, what was the snippet that kept you going?
It was something that didn't exist. It was this new, it sounds wild now, but when we started Refinery, like most of the big fashion brands didn't even have a website. So doing something digital was really exciting. I was learning so much. I always felt motivated to by creating space and opportunities for creative people to like shine, to show their work, you know, whether that was those designers in the beginning and kind of creating a place where they could find audience and find customers. But then later it was really about, you know, as I was running a big creative team, it was about creating these really cool opportunities and giving these first opportunities to amazing creative people, discovering talent, building talent. And as we grew too, I felt really motivated to shift the way women were represented, the way that women's stories were told, you know, creating much more, you know, nuance in those narratives. And I also got really motivated by feedback, you know, by people saying that they felt, you know, seen by the stories that we were doing or seen by the way that we were shifting the visual landscape.
I think so much of being successful in a business too is time management and what you devote your time to and who you devote your time to. So if you had to, perhaps with the project that you're building today, if you had to devote only 2 hours of your time each week to building it, what will you devote those hours to?
For me right now, the most important thing is basically experimenting and talking to the community, creating opportunities and experiences where I can put something in front of people and then talking to them and getting the feedback.
What's something that you want to do but you haven't done yet?
Skydive.
Ooh, me too. If you could tell your future self one thing, what would that be?
I love you. I love you and thank you.
That's so kind. And no one had said that before. I love that.
Yeah, I sometimes thank my, it's a cool question because I sometimes thank my past self. Like I like to do that. And I also like to kind of, if I achieve something or learn something, sometimes I like to do a practice of writing my past self a note. Either to show them like how something turned out that I was worried about, or to thank like past Piera for the actions and the things that she did or the things that she had to like persevere to get me to this new point.
Recently, like probably 4 months ago, I wrote an email to my future self and I schedule it for a year from now. And I haven't looked at it because I want to see it, you know, a year from now. And I just think I do it just to keep myself accountable. Beyond your work, how do you want to be remembered?
Oh, I love that. I would say beyond my work, I want to be remembered as the life of the party, as the person that fed you, skinny dipped with you, the person that turned an everyday moment into something memorable.
Here are my top takeaways from our conversation. Number one, by fully embracing what you love and what you're good at, you get the momentum you need to succeed. Number two, when you reframe the way you see things, the outcome changes. Start considering opportunities as experiments that you can try, see how you like, and learn from. And number three, you need to understand what advice actually works for you and your personal circumstances. That self-awareness makes the difference when it comes to making decisions that suit you. Thank you so much for listening. Gracias, mi gente. Be sure to follow, subscribe, and leave us a review. That's so helpful and exciting to us. If you learned something from this episode, share it with a friend. I'm sure they'll enjoy it as well. We drop new episodes every single Monday morning, but you can always find us on Instagram at El ADN Podcast. And before you leave, we want to hear your takeaways from today's guest. Share with us via Instagram stories and don't forget to tag El ADN Podcast and Victoria Leandra for a regram. See you next week. Hasta la próxima, familia.